This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Because some of the countries that have been decertified to participate in AGOA have something to do with the failure of those countries to maintain a human rights regime that the U.S. considers to be appropriate.
That's John Makum Mbaku, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., on the African Growth and Opportunity Act's rigorous eligibility requirements. Details coming up. Also, more than 1.1 million doses of vaccine have arrived in South Sudan to fight outbreaks of cholera. And Ethiopia says it will collaborate with a new African Union force against the Al-Shabaab insurgents in Somalia. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Since its enactment in 2000, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, has been at the core of U.S. economic policy and commercial engagement with Africa. It provides eligible African countries with duty-free access to the U.S. market. 2025 is the year the U.S. Congress is due to renew AGOA. John Makum Mbaku is a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., as well as a Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics and John S. Hinckley Fellow at Weber State University. To benefit from the U.S. market through AGOA, Professor Mbaku says, African nations need to approach the process as a regional bloc. He starts out by pointing out to me the rigorous eligibility requirements for AGOA.
Well, there are some things that countries have to go through, but I think the most important of them has to do with the American definition of human rights. Because some of the countries that have been decertified to participate in AGOA have something to do with the failure of those countries to maintain a human rights regime that the U.S. considers to be appropriate. So democracy and human rights are very important. Countries can lose their eligibility through that process.
Professor, almost about 30 or so countries are eligible for AGOA. I understand you had a Zoom meeting in Nairobi concerning AGOA. What happens as we move forward to 2025 for African nations?
I think that one of the things we discussed at during that meeting, if African countries are to benefit from the U.S. market, they need to approach the process through regional cooperation. For example, instead of Kenya trying to negotiate, or say Kenya or Uganda or Tanzania, trying to negotiate agreements with the U.S. for entrance into the U.S. market, they should instead approach that process from the point of view of the East African community. The same thing with, say, Nigeria or Ghana, from the point of view of a West African community, which is ECOWAS. They would have a stronger way to negotiate with the U.S. if they came into the process as a regional bloc. And the idea there being that as Africans form these regional blocs and regional trade blocs and strengthen them, these blocs can then help them become a continental market that will allow them to negotiate more effectively, not only with the U.S., but also with other countries around the world, say China, for example, or the European Union. You can learn from the European Union the reason the Europeans are moving progressively towards a single bloc that will allow them to negotiate with the U.S. and China and other countries is because they already understand the benefits of negotiating as a bloc as opposed to negotiating as a single unit. One of the things we discussed was that African countries should approach AGOA from a regional perspective as opposed to one from a single individual country. They would benefit more from that process than they would if they were trying to negotiate with the U.S. as a single entity.
Will the U.S. go along with that?
It's not whether the U.S. would go along with it or not. I mean, in my opinion, it really has nothing to do with what the U.S. wants as opposed to what the Africans want. If the Africans are strong enough as a unit to negotiate, then the external entity that is trying to negotiate with them would have no choice. It is true that the U.S. could simply say no. But if you look at it very critically, you're going to understand, I mean, Africa is very important to the U.S. Just look at the competition that is going on now in Djibouti between the U.S., China, and several other countries over access to that particular country. There's an East African community in existence right now, and it functions. It's, I believe its headquarters are located in Tanzania, Arusha, and it has its own government, and it actually functions. And it has a constitution, and it's functioning. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, is also functioning. It has its headquarters in Abuja, Nigeria, and even has its own court, the Community Court of Justice of ECOWAS. And the court issues judgments that are binding on all member countries, and the court has issued some very, very interesting judgments that I've read regarding human rights and the treatment of individuals. So, yes, those communities exist, and SADC, the Southern African Development Community, also exists. And so these communities exist, and they're doing quite well. They are not as advanced as, say, the European Union, but they are there. They provide the foundation for Africans to get together and try to understand that there are benefits from functioning as blocs as opposed to functioning as individual countries.
That was John Makum Mbaku, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. He talked with me from the U.S. state of Utah. More than 1.1 million doses of an oral cholera vaccine have arrived in South Sudan as the government launched a program to inoculate more than 80% of the population. But the mass vaccination exercise faces numerous challenges, including a lack of access to the areas dealing with the worst cholera outbreaks. Sheila Pony reports from Juba, South Sudan.
Medics in South Sudan will attempt to vaccinate at least 9 million people against cholera, an exercise that targets mostly children and mothers. More than 1.1 million doses of oral cholera vaccine arrived in the capital, Juba, and will be dispatched next week to the hotspot areas like the town of Bentiu. The country's Ministry of Health reported last week that 199 people have died of cholera, with 13,000 more diagnosed so far with the bacteria.
Of course, we also received some vaccine before, only that they were not enough because, you know, it's not like the cholera vaccine has already been is manufactured and is put in one place.
At least one cholera case has been recorded in 29 of the 79 counties in South Sudan, with Bentiu, Reng and Juba most affected. The first case was reported on September 23rd in Reng, northeast of the capital. But as the country prepares to roll out a massive vaccination exercise, the process faces some serious headwinds. Sijin Kwat is one of the victims of the cholera outbreak. He says he has seen people die of the disease, with many more trooping to the local health centers seeking urgent medical attention.
I was in the health facility, one of the health facilities, for a suspected case of cholera. The patient is 5 years old. The patient was vomiting. In the process, the health workers could give the fluid, and they could not get the vein so that they can run the fluid. The patient is not able to take oral fluid, but ORS. In that process, until the patient died of dehydration.
Cholera is an acute diarrhea infection caused by consuming contaminated food or water. If not treated, it can be fatal within hours. Kwat says accessibility to healthcare remains a major hindrance to the fight against the disease.
Some of the community members, they don't have access because, you know, in Bentiu, there's also blood. There's some other areas that the health workers could not access because of the blood. And as
According to Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, poor living conditions in South Sudan have created perfect breeding ground for cholera. Stephanie Ngay is MSF's project coordinator for cholera response in Bentiu, located in Rupe Kona County, an area with a large refugee population.
Here in Rupe Kona, the explosion of the outbreak very quickly overwhelmed the local systems that are responsible for coordinating the response and scaling up interventions. Other partners do not have adequate funding to properly scale up to the level needed, which is massive, and the overall response coordination has not been strong enough to manage the response and ensure that the needs are adequately met.
The government says the vaccination exercise is expected to roll out next Monday with support from international partners such as MSF and the World Health Organization. Bor Daniel is the immunization program manager for the Unity State Ministry of Health. He says the various entities will split up duties in Rupe Kona.
Kona, it has many fayam. Most of the fayam are affected by flooding, and these are the ones that will be taken by WHO, which are hard to reach area. WHO and other partners are pledging to cover all those areas that are hard to reach, and also we are very far away from town. Bentiu IDP, Rupe Kona, and Bentiu town. This area will be covered by MSF, and the recruiting process is ongoing.
The vaccination exercise will target children 1 year and above. WHO says up to 143,000 people worldwide die from cholera each year out of an estimated 40 million annual cases. Sheila Aponi, VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
Ethiopia on Friday announced it will collaborate with a new African Union force against Islamist al-Shabaab insurgents in Somalia, which is set to deploy late this month. Mogadishu previously indicated that Ethiopian troops would not take part due to strained relations between the two countries after the government in Addis Ababa signed a maritime agreement with the breakaway region of Somaliland. Mogadishu considers Somaliland an integral part of its territory and called its deal with Ethiopia an act of aggression. But after months of wrangling, according to the French news agency AFP, the two countries last month agreed to end tensions in a compromise deal brokered by Turkey. The peacekeeping force is intended to replace the United Nations-backed African Union transition mission in Somalia. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehia Suhib, in Washington. The 119th U.S. Congress will come into session Friday, but after a contentious battle over government funding last month, the Republican Party's seemingly unified control of the Senate, House of Representatives, and the presidency faces challenges. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
A new U.S. Congress set to start Friday. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
President Trump will return to D.C. and to the White House, and we will have Republican control of the Senate and the House. Things are going to be very different around here.
But Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson's leadership position is in jeopardy after his deal last month with Democrats to keep the government funded and open. Kevin Kosar is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
Mr. Johnson caught a lot of fire from his GOP colleagues, and he has an extraordinarily limited margin for his majority, just a handful of people.
President-elect Donald Trump posted his support for Johnson on social media Monday, saying the speaker was, quote, a good, hardworking, religious man. But Republican Representatives Chip Roy and Thomas Massey have already stated their doubts about his leadership. And Trump ally and advisor Steve Bannon called on Republicans to remove Johnson from leadership.
Clearly, Johnson's not up to the task and he's got to go.
2 years ago, at the start of another Congress, Republican Kevin McCarthy faced similar challenges to his bid for the speakership.
A speaker has not been elected.
He was finally elected on the 15th round of voting. Meanwhile, House Democrats have expressed concern about the influence of billionaire Elon Musk after he stalled the government funding bill by posting his concerns about it on social media. Representative Pramila Jayapal heads the House Progressive Caucus.
Musk has been tweeting out all kinds of lies and misinformation about even what was in the package.
Change is also coming to the U.S. Senate as Republicans take the majority from Democrats and Mitch McConnell steps away from party leadership for the first time in 18 years. John Thune of South Dakota will now be the top Republican.
We have a mandate from the American people. A mandate not only to clean up the mess left by the Biden-Harris-Schumer agenda, but also to deliver on President Trump's priorities.
Traditionally, the first 100 days of a new presidency and Congress are a time for an ambitious legislative agenda. Casey Burgett is a professor at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
He's going to hit tariffs very hard. He's going to focus on the border and executive orders related to immigration and immigrants, particularly from Mexico and Muslim countries. And then he's going to work on any compromises he can to get through the legislative agenda on things affecting the economy, groceries, as he likes to call it.
The U.S. House of Representatives is also scheduled to certify the results of the 2024 election next Monday, confirming Donald Trump won the presidency. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. House of Representatives votes later today for a new speaker. Check out voanews.com and voaafrica.com for updates on the vote and the latest in U.S. politics. As North Korean troops bolster Russia's war effort in Ukraine, the United States is urging China to rein in its allies' provocative actions. This comes amid indications that Beijing is increasingly uneasy about the expanding partnership between Russia and North Korea. VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching reports.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping held their third and likely final face-to-face talks on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit last month in Lima, Peru. During their talks, Biden expressed deep concerns over China's support for Russia, which Washington says has prolonged the war in Ukraine. He also condemned North Korea for sending thousands of troops to fight alongside Russian forces. For his part, Xi reiterated China's efforts to mediate peace talks, positioning Beijing as a potential stabilizing force in the war. In meetings with his NATO counterpart, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that European allies have joined the United States in urging China to do more to curb its material assistance to Russia, which threatens security in Europe.
Over the past 4 years, we've had an unprecedented convergence among allies on the challenges that China poses to transatlantic security, and that includes its critical support for Russia's defense industrial base, which enables Russia's ongoing aggression, and intensifies what is the biggest threat to European security since the end of the Cold War.
Chinese officials have avoided making any comments about North Korea's decision to send troops to Russia. Analysts say this silence reveals China's frustration and the dilemma posed by the growing military ties between its two neighbors. Dennis Wilder is a former China analyst with the CIA and now an assistant professor of Asian Studies at Georgetown University. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
The Putin-Xi relationship is not as solid or close as sometimes we imagine it. Putin will do what's in his interest, and he won't necessarily tell the Chinese what he's doing. I don't believe the Chinese were informed in advance, for example, of this mutual defense pact between Putin and the North.
Some former U.S. officials say the explicit security partnership between Russia and North Korea could weaken China's strategic position in East Asia and have long-term implications that may not benefit Beijing. Nike Ching, VOA News, Washington.
In our sports roundup, we have VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, in the tennis world, Novak Djokovic loses in the Brisbane quarterfinals. What were the sentiments in the tennis world?
Yes, it is really one of the biggest shockers if you really look at who he was going up against. Opelka currently is ranked number 293rd in the world, going up against Novak Djokovic, who currently is ranked number 7, but we know he's a 24-time Grand Slam champion.
Yes.
This was supposed to be, quote-unquote, a walk in the park. But interestingly enough, that 293rd ranking doesn't really do it justice for Opelka, because in February 2022, just about 2 years ago, he got all the way down to ranked world number 17. So he is a world talent. He ended up having to undergo hip surgery, and you know, his recovery has been daunting from that fact, but it was still a shocker for the whole world. So we'll see. I believe Andy Murray now is going to be Djokovic's coach, or a part of his coaching team, so we'll see how he does moving forward after this.
Now moving over to the hardwood in the NBA, who have been the hottest teams in the season so far?
13 wins in a row for the young Oklahoma City Thunder. They are currently in the number one spot in the Western Conference. We always know that the Western Conference is the more difficult conferences of the two. They currently have 28 wins and only 5 losses. You know, a MVP-type caliber performance by SGA currently. So we'll see how they do. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers, yes, we've been talking about them all year long. They are still number one in the East, 29 wins and 4 losses only. The Boston Celtics, the reigning champions, are right behind them in number 2 in the Eastern Conference.
And lastly, Mokbil, what are some football games to look forward to this weekend in the English Premier League?
If we're looking at the English Premier League, we obviously have to talk about Liverpool versus Manchester United. What a clash, what a clash. Funny enough, Manchester United, last season, even though they had a poor season, were able to defeat Liverpool every time they played. So it's going to be a very different Liverpool team that's really coming, not only because we're in the number one spot, but we need to set this kind of record straight, as you are United currently sitting somewhere in 13th or 14th place. We're at the top of the league and the top of the Champions League, so they're going to really come out to do some damage. Also, Arsenal versus Brighton. Arsenal still trying to keep that pressure on. 6-point lead for Liverpool at the top with the game at hand. You cannot afford to lose any more points. It'll be a tough game because they'll be going up against a Brighton side that is playing extremely well, but they'll be without one of their premier defenders, Jurrien Timber.
Our sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.